Going Linux, number 47. Computer America, number 7. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. Our goal is to help make the Linux experience easy for you.
Each month, we publish 3 episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, I appear live on the Computer America radio show. We post those episodes, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
Our user experience episodes appear near the end of each month. In them, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for computer users building their confidence and competence with Linux. This is my 7th appearance on the Computer America show from October 21st, 2008.
America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running and nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 21st of October, 2008, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
Hey, so did you see any good movies, Kerry?
I did not see. Well, there's no good movies out, is there?
Max Payne. Come on.
No good movies out. You know what? I'm just waiting for some DVD rentals. Those are going to be DVD rentals for me because we've been going to the movies a lot lately, and we've seen everything, you know, the Hulk and Indiana Jones, and, you know, wasted my money on Babylon AD and my time. And there's just been so many movies that we've seen that when the DVDs come out, we'll be like, well, there's no DVDs to rent. We've already seen all the movies. There's nothing to do tonight, you know, trying to avoid that. So we're picking our movies selectively now, especially as Thanksgiving,
well, yeah,
draws near.
Well,
and of course there'll be some, you know, the Quantum of Solace. I want to see the new James Bond movie.
Absolutely.
The Star Trek movie I think is supposed to be out sometime around Christmas time, and I do want to see that in spite of the fact it's a J.J. Abrams movie.
Now, you know, was it I understand one of the characters, one of the actors that's in the current TV hit Heroes, actually is going to play the new Mr. Spock. He actually plays a bad guy called Siler. On Heroes. Are you watching the Heroes TV show?
I don't watch that, but I'm starting to watch a British show called No Heroics, which is sort of a takeoff of that.
Yeah.
Where everybody's got really stupid, like one guy can turn lights off and on.
Oh, it's a parody. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been watching Heroes from the start, and it's in its, what, the third season now or something. And anyway, the bad guy is the actor who plays him is actually going to play the role of the young Mr. Spock. I assume that the movie is about Star Trek from the beginning, you know, back the original characters from the 60s.
My understanding is they're all supposed to be a lot younger.
Yeah, exactly.
And Simon Pegg, who I just adore, he's just a fantastic, funny British guy.
Yeah.
He's got a bunch of movies out, How to Alienate People.
Yeah.
How to Lose Friends and Alienate People is a current movie out. Run, Fat Boy, Run is another movie. He played a villain in Doctor Who.
Yeah. Well, who's going to play Kirk?
He's going to be Scotty.
Who's going to play Kirk? Yeah, you know, if we go online, we probably can find the answers to all these questions.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to do that while I'm talking to you.
Okay, so I'm sure.
I'm one step ahead.
Yeah, well, look up who playing Spock because you'll say his name and I'll recognize the actor from the show. But anyway, it is Tuesday night, And because it is Tuesday night, it is which Tuesday night is it? Actually, it is.
Chris Pine is Kirk. Zachary Quinto, Spock.
Yes,
Zachary Eric Quintos. Banya is Nero. Whoever well, Nero
he,
is.
He was from he was from the Incredible Hulk. The first.
I know who Eric Banya is. I don't know who Nero is. Oh. What cast member is Nero?
I don't know Nero.
Winona Ryder is Amanda Grayson.
That these are all new characters to the series.
Carl Urban. I know Carl Urban. What do I know him from? He's going to be Bones.
Dr. McCoy. Dr. McCoy. All right. Yeah.
Bruce Greenwood's going to be Christopher Pike. Remember Bruce Greenwood?
Yeah. No. But I know Christopher Pike. That he was in the original pilot episode. The minute that was made into the was it the Menagerie? I think it was the opening one.
The Menagerie, right? Yeah, he was exactly. The original Captain Kirk.
Yeah. Right. Who it was played by Christopher Pike.
Bruce Greenwood is like he was in National Treasure: Book of Secrets. He was in.
Oh yeah, okay.
Deja Vu.
All right, I know.
Clash. I thought was it him? Was he in Babylon 5 or that was?
No, Bruce Boxleitner. Bruce Boxleitner. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry, I was thinking that was Bruce Boxleitner. So Bruce Greenwood, and then try to see if there's any other. Leonard Nimoy is going to play Old Spock.
Really?
And Chris Hemsworth is going to play George Kirk.
George,
must be a father of James T. Kirk,
or really a brother? I don't know. Hey. Let's
Tyler Perry's going to be in it.
Why don't we bring on our guest then for the 1000? Maybe he'll know some of this stuff about. Maybe he's into this stuff. But of course, it is the third Tuesday of the month, and that means it's going to be an all Linux show because the Linux operating system continues to be more and more popular, especially in the wake of Microsoft's Vista. And as I said, it's an important operating system. So every third Tuesday of the month, we devote the entire show to Linux in order to answer questions like, you know, should I switch over to it? You know, is it right for me? And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call as well. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome back into Computer America.
Hey, thanks a lot. And might know a little bit about this kind of stuff. How can you be a Linux geek and not be into this kind of stuff? I think Pike, Captain Pike, was not the actor, but the character in the pilot.
Yes. Was originally, yes. They changed it because originally they presented it to the network and they thought it was too cerebral and they couldn't figure it out. So they didn't want to waste all the footage. So they took that original two-hour pilot and made it into a two one-hour series, which had a two-parter. And basically, Kirk is Kirk, and the guy that's in that chair they renamed the Captain Christopher Pike, who was the predecessor, you know, and went through all of this. So that's basically how that went.
You know way too much about this stuff.
Well, here's some trivia that says that this is the first time that Uhura has both a first and last name, Nyota Uhura. Gene Roddenberry never came up with a first name for her. So many thought that she didn't have one. And also, do you remember we talked about the teacher over at Carnegie Mellon who did a thing called The Last Lecture? He was dying of pancreatic cancer. Well, his dream was to be in a Star Trek movie. Well, he got invited by J.J. Abrams to appear as an extra in this film and actually did it. Now, of course, he died on July 25th of this year. But he's going to be an extra in this film, and he actually says in his blog that he even got a line.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of cool.
It is.
That's really neat. So, and then William Shatner said in an interview with Howard Stern that he was never even asked to be.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
And they said here Simon Pegg filmed his role in just 5 weeks. So anyway, you know what? I'm not a big fan of J.J. Abrams. I'm not a fan of Fringe or Lost or you know that style of movie making that or TV making that J.J. Abrams does. Cloverfield. That's just not my thing.
Oh, I couldn't stand that.
I'm curious what he's going to do with Star Trek. He's going to make it like Lost or Fringe or Cloverfield.
Oh, no, please.
Where you just don't know what the heck is going on.
Oh, and
that's my fear.
And he's not going to do it with a handheld movie camera, please. And I got nauseated the last time with that Cloverfield thing. Oh,
well,
oh,
maybe he'll surprise us all.
Well,
I'm hoping. Like let's hope. Let's hope. It couldn't be any worse than Star Trek VI, could it? I don't know.
Well, what was the Star Trek VI? What was the
Undiscovered Country with William Shatner directed it? Oh, it was terrible.
Oh, well, yeah, well. Which of all the Star Trek movies did you like the best?
Four.
Which was the one with the whales?
Yes.
Yeah, I knew it. I just knew
it.
I
love that one. I love that one. That was so great.
I have to agree with that. That was a good one.
Yeah, good story.
Yeah.
You like the story.
It was a good story, and yeah, it was very absolutely. Humble the way they treated each other. It was a little more down to earth, a little more
I like
believable than Scotty, you know, Scott going, you know, Spock going off to some place in a coffin and waking back up and starting life over again. That was just too hard.
Or the Genesis device. Yeah, but I know. I remember the my favorite scene from the one with the whales is when Scotty picks up the Macintosh mouse and talks into it. Says, "Hello, computer."
Hello, computer.
I was just going to say the same thing. That's exactly my favorite scene as well.
And it was my favorite scene was he says, "This is." He said it was the material that they used was see through. Or was transparent
aluminum,
steel,
yeah.
or aluminum?
Transparent aluminum, yes.
And
aluminum.
He goes, "Well, you can't give him the
the formula,
the recipe to make that." He goes, "Well, how do I know he didn't invent it?" Nice.
And the Mac that they used in the movie was it was like a 128K Mac. It was like a really early version of the Mac. You know, so it was one of the first models.
How do I find the nuclear vessels? Yeah. it was so many good lines.
And remember where we parked. You know, that's another one. Good
yeah. Remember where we parked. And then when he says, "I sold my glasses at the pawn shop," and he's like, "Well, you just got those glasses." Yeah, I'll get them again. That's the beauty of it. All right. Anyway.
All right.
So Linux.
Yes, more Linux.
That's what tonight's show is all about. It is is it the third Tuesday of the month already?
Yeah, it is.
Apparently it is because Larry Bushy's here. Larry, of course, the host of the Going Linux podcast. And were you the host or the co-host?
I am the host and originator.
The host.
Yeah.
The originator and host of the Going Linux podcast, a free download of audio on demand that you can listen to if you're using Linux, thinking of using Linux. And we're going to talk tonight, as we do each Thursday, for both hours of the show tonight, about Linux. Now, tonight's show, we're going to focus on
Linux.
Well, specifically, help me out here, Larry.
Strangely
I'm trying
enough,
to find the document.
Well, it's in the news. Wikipedia adopts Ubuntu Linux.
That's one of the news topics that I had provided for us to talk about. But the overall topic is I'm ready to try Linux. I'm also going to be using Windows or Mac. How do I minimize the learning curve and maximize compatibility? That's a very long topic sentence for today.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. So, and do you think that there are a lot of people asking that very question, Larry? What prompts you to make this the topic?
Well, this is it's kind of a mix between all of the Mac switcher ads, you know, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC, and, you know, it could be I'm a Linux PC as well. Mm-hmm. And
or a Linux Mac.
A Linux Mac, that's right. Yeah. And one of the things that's happening as a result of the introduction of Vista, which is more than a year ago now, if you can believe that, is that people are thinking to themselves, I would like to try something new, but I'm not really sure that Vista is what I'm interested in. And if I have to switch, let me try something else because I've been hearing about viruses or I've got a virus on my Windows computer and I'm tired of the viruses. I'm tired of having to reboot every time that I install software or update software or get a patch from Microsoft.
Maybe somebody just needs to get a little more rest. They sound awful tired.
Aren't these the same things people are saying though when they're thinking about getting a Mac? Because everything that you just said pretty much applies.
That's exactly right. They're thinking of what's an alternative to continuing to use Windows. And so there are a lot of people switching to the Mac. That's absolutely true. And Apple is jumping on that bandwagon with both feet. I think their advertising strategy is absolutely right on and well-timed. And it's also a good opportunity for the Linux folks. The one thing that Linux people don't have is a $300 million budget to spend on advertising. So you don't hear as much about it. But because Vista has gotten such bad press, people are looking beyond the two top operating systems out there and going to the third one. And I dare say that Linux is in the top three for operating systems for the desktop computer.
Well, Larry, there's one thing going for Windows Linux because in the sense that the Windows people already have an investment in equipment, at least with that, they can use Linux without having to buy the hardware over again. Whether it's a Mac,
exactly
they would have
right.
to.
Yes,
so that's right. That's one factor in that equation. There's another one. I'll tell you what, we're up against the break here. Why don't we continue on with this? This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux, both hours, on this special show. Computer America, we'll be right back.
America, the official computer radio talk show of CompUSA.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. If you want to join us, you certainly can. It's really easy to do. There's several ways you can do it. You can call us toll-free at 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-8255. That number will get you on and get you through. You can also send us email to live@computeramerica.com if you have a question about Linux or you don't want to go on the air, but you still want to ask your question. That's a great way to do it. Or you can join us in our chat room. The way that works is you go to the Computer America homepage. Over there on the left, it says, chat with us. Pick a screen name. You type that in the little box there, and that's the name you'll be known by when you go into the Computer America chat room. Click the join button, and your Java-enabled browser, be on a Windows machine, Macintosh, Linux, even Vista. Yes, it all works. It'll move you into the chat room where our guest for both hours is participating, Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And just before the break, I was talking to Larry about the topic, which is I'm ready to try Linux. I'm also going to be using Windows or a Mac. How do I minimize the learning curve and maximize compatibility? And this evidently is a question that a lot of people are asking. If you already own a PC, probably it's a little easier to make the choice because you already have an investment in hardware. It's that machine that's running Windows, and of course that will determine which platform you would choose when going into Linux. However, if you don't have either a Windows machine, a PC, or a Macintosh, and that you're now asking this question, well, then perhaps maybe the path isn't quite as clear because you can clearly run Linux on a Mac. The question is, the Mac OS X operating system is really a really terrific one. It's kind of based on the same underpinnings of what Linux is on. Would you really want to run Linux or if you've got OS X, 10.5 Leopard, which is a terrific operating system? Like, I'll throw that back at you, Larry.
Well, you might. It depends on your objective. If your objective is just to leave the viruses and spyware behind, mm-hmm. and have a good, solid operating system that just works,
yeah.
either one will do the job, the Mac operating system or Linux. Now, if you are wanting to have the nice hardware, the nice beautiful design of a Macintosh computer, whether that's a desktop or a laptop, then you start thinking about, well, maybe I should move to a Mac. It's got the hardware and it's got a better operating system that insulates me from viruses and spyware, and it's got a lot of software working for it. Now, the other thing to think about is when using a Mac, it can get kind of expensive. You, first of all, have to buy the hardware, but if you've already invested in the hardware, made the decision that you want something that looks nicer than your old clunky PC,
uh-huh.
Then you go ahead and buy the Mac hardware. But as you begin using it, you realize that, okay, it comes with a lot of software. That's great.
And a lot of
software out of the box. But as you begin using it, you realize, oh, wait a minute, I'd like a better version of this, or I'd like to do something a little bit different or a little more powerful than the software that came with the Mac. And now you've got to go to the Apple Store or wherever you buy it online and purchase it. People who are looking for an alternative to Windows, who are on a budget, are going to look at Linux as a possibility, because most of what you see in Linux, including the operating system itself, is without charge. There are some commercial packages that you can purchase for Linux, which cost money, of course, but most of what you need for day-to-day computing and most of what you need for things beyond day-to-day computing are absolutely free of charge and available in a simple download from the Linux package manager or the repositories of software that each of the distributions of Linux maintains. So for someone on the budget, that's really the optimal choice, is something that gets you away from the problems with Windows, or the perceived problems with Windows. I have to give them credit. They're not as bad as some people think they are. But they definitely do have the problems with viruses and spyware that other operating systems don't have. And there are some other disadvantages that are technical disadvantages that people will move to either Mac or Linux for. But moving to Linux is not just when you buy new hardware. You can purchase new hardware with Linux on it, of course, but many people, I've found from the listeners to the show writing in on emails or sending us voice messages to play over the air, are saying, I have an older computer, and it was on its last legs, or I just had a crash of Windows, and I'm looking for an alternative. I'm just fed up, and I installed Ubuntu, or I installed OpenSUSE, or I installed Mandriva, and it breathed new life into this old technology, and it runs even faster than it ever did on Windows. So that's really where the big push is for switchers from Windows to Linux, is those people who are trying to, especially in these economic times, trying to keep a hold of something they may have paid $2,000 or $3,000 for if they've got a laptop, right, or maybe $1,000 for, maybe even more if it's a desktop, and keep using it for a little bit longer without having to spend more money on it.
It seems to me, Larry, that this story that I'm hearing is predominantly on the PC side. When we come back, what story do you hear for people who have a Mac, and do they find themselves in that same predicament? Or do you hear stories like that, or is the Mac owners, are they giving you a different story? Let's explore that when we return. This is Computer America. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, and the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. All this hour and the next, we're dedicating to the subject of Linux. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, is our Linux guest. He is our Linux expert, and right now we're kind of addressing a general topic that says, I'm ready to buy Linux. I'm also going to be using Windows or a Mac. And how do I minimize the learning curve and maximize compatibility? And you gave us a fairly good scenario of the typical person or persons that are considering moving from a Windows environment to the Linux environment for a number of reasons, including the fact that they already have a vested interest in the PC hardware. But what I'd like to also hear is this: what story questions are being asked of those who have a Macintosh, have an investment in the Mac platform, and they're saying, what are questions? The one thing that comes to mind for me is maybe they have an older Mac, because the older Macs are getting a little long in the tooth, and they're finding it more and more difficult to run the modern operating systems, the 10.4, the Tigers, the 10.5, the Leopards, that are really require some processing power, and the older ones might not be able to do it, but you have an investment in the Mac and you don't want to fall behind. Is that more of a description of people who might be wanting considering Linux?
Well, don't you know that if you buy Mac, you don't switch from that?
you already got it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do hear that a little bit, but not nearly so much as from the PC users who want to retain their older hardware. The older Macs, there are fewer and fewer Linux distributions that actually run on the older Macs. In fact, one of the most popular distributions out there, Ubuntu, has stopped supporting the older Macintosh hardware and will, of course, support it on the Intel Macs because they'll run Windows or Linux, of course. But there are still a couple of distributions out there. Yellow Dog is one that comes to mind that is designed for the older Mac,
the
and
G5s,
you can put it on there.
The G5s and
Yes, exactly. And so you can put that on the older Macintosh hardware, and it'll breathe some more life into it if you find it a little behind the times, and it'll bring it a little more up to date with a little more modern operating system. But generally speaking, people who have Macintosh computers, there is some truth to that. That once you buy Mac, you'd never go back. And so I rarely hear people who want to switch from Mac to Linux. I hear some people who want to experiment with Linux on a Mac. And that's primarily from the people who are using the Macintosh, not just the graphical user interface, but are delving into that BSD base Unix-like operating system and realize that it's not as open and friendly as Linux is to installing new software and using it as a Unix-type environment.
Or playing around with the terminal to put in the Unix commands.
Yes, that's little, right, exactly.
Be a little daunting, absolutely. Reminds me of a DOS, you know, on steroids. Hey, 60 seconds, we're going to break, and that's what the music means. We'll continue on talking about Linux all this hour and the next. We'll be back in 60 seconds. This is the Computer America Show. Stay with us.
Welcome back into the Computer America Show. We are live on the Business and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks, broadcasting coast to coast and around the world through the web at ComputerAmerica.com.
I like how you do that.
And I should just record that. And then
I like the spontaneity.
Well, that's one thing you could say about me.
There you go. You're spontaneous.
And the second word would be combustion. Our guest today is Larig Bushy. He's the originator, the creator, and host of the Going Linux podcast, a free on-demand audio that you can download on your computer, listen to at your convenience, on your computer, on your MP3 player, burn it to a CD, listen to it in your car. And we're talking all about the switchover, the change, going through the change, the metamorphosis, the caterpillar into the butterfly, going from Windows or Mac to Linux, and the stumbling blocks or ways to avoid obstacles in that path. Now, before the break, you were mentioning that the Mac is not quite as friendly when it comes to choice and software.
Yeah, it's not so much choice in software as it is my understanding. Now, I have to couch this by saying I have not used a Mac, okay? I've had my hands on a Mac, and I have used it a little bit, but not to the extent that I've used Linux or Windows.
Craig will correct you if you're wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
Or disagrees.
And that's why I wanted to couch this. Anyway, from what I understand from my Apple-using buddies, the terminal in the Mac is BSD. It is Unix-like, and it does give you the ability to run some of the commands that you would run in a Unix environment.
Yep.
And one of the things, though, that you're not able to do because Macintosh operating system is a proprietary operating system, is hack into it to the same degree, friendly hacking, not the type of black hat cracking that people will do, but actually go into the operating system and make it do what you want it to rather than the other way around.
Well, now I won't take exception with you, Sam. I will agree with most of everything you say, because first of all, you have to be get into Apple protects its kernel, the operating system again, with a passion, because quite frankly, they don't want people going in there mucking it up and causing a problem. So
no,
first of all,
they have to support it. Yeah.
Yeah. And what you have to do, you have to go beyond the administrator level. You have to not you have to be a user. You have to be a super user.
Yes.
To get into that. And when you get into the super user, because there's all kinds of protections and lockouts, again, not to make things difficult necessarily for the casual, they want to make it difficult for the casual user, because they don't want them going in there and messing things up, and then really, you know, and once you delete a file or you change something and you move it around, and then, you know, your whole system crashes, because mm-hmm. they want it to be as bulletproof as possible. And that's one of the beauties of OS X, is that it is a fairly bulletproof. A third-party developer, it's almost impossible to write an application that's going to do something that's going to bring the whole system to its knees. The application itself, it's protected memory. The application itself could crash and blow up, but the operating system will continue, because you can't get in there to mess around with it to bring it down to its knees. That's the intention. However, if you are a super user and you're in the terminal mode, you can get into most everything. I think it's the kernel itself is proprietary. They won't let you hack into that. But other than that, most everything else, and I mean most everything else, is accessible. You can get into it. But, you know, buyer beware. You do that, you mess with something, you don't, you know, you better have backup. Make sure you're backed up.
Right. And Apple has very good reasons for doing that, and you've described them very, very well. And for those people who do want to get into that super user mode and to mess around with everything but the kernel, they are probably the more advanced user than would be the average user on Windows, even, that might be a super user in Windows. But and that's the kind of person that might want to experiment around with Linux. In doing a bit of research for an episode of the Going Linux podcast, where we reviewed the comparison between upgrading to Vista and upgrading by moving to a Mac or by moving to Linux, and comparing not only the costs involved, because that's a hands-down win for Linux because most of what you get there is free, but also the performance and the flexibility and other factors as well. I spoke with one of my podcasting buddies who actually works for Apple and who is very much into hacking computers and so on. Mm-hmm. And so his a lot of the information that I have for my frame of reference on a Macintosh comes from him, and especially right. from the perspective of putting Linux, Unix applications and those kinds of things in, uh-huh. onto a Mac. And his comments to me indicate that because Apple has to protect its kernel, the Darwin kernel, and they have to support this. They, as you said, don't allow the user to go in there and to do the kinds of things that you can do on a Linux computer, which is get in there and write your own code and change the way Linux works if you want to. And if you're that much of a super user, if you crash your computer, you're going to know how to uncrash your computer as well. So for the people switching from Macintosh to Linux, not so much. For those people who want to get a little more into the guts of an operating system and are currently using Mac, those are the folks who are saying, you know, I'd like to give Linux a try. Let me get one of these nice new Intel Macs. Let me put Windows on there. Let me put Linux on there as well, and I'll triple boot this thing, and I'll have a really beefy machine.
Well, yeah, and that's true. That's one of the things about the Mac, is that it runs all the platforms directly. You know, mm-hmm. that's because it's Intel based, and everything runs on Intel. But realistically, Larry, what percentage of the population are we talking about here? I mean,
well, wait. Let's rewind it back with the whole thing that Microsoft did with the Mojave experiment.
Okay.
Do you think you could put together a Linux computer with all of the necessary add-ons that you could sit Joe User down like Microsoft did and say, "What do you think of this operating system?" and have them all walk away going, "Wow, that was fantastic. That's Linux." You know, we could call it the Sahara experiment.
Well, you know, I really do think that there is something to that. I think that a lot of people have the perception in their mind when somebody brings up Linux, those people who even know what it is, they have in their mind the Linux of the past, where it was very much a geek operating system. You had to be a techie who knew how to use the command line to run Linux. And it had an interface that reminded people of Windows 95, you know, the boxy windows and the monochrome sort of color
polished
scheme. Exactly. And that's the 1980s, 1990s versions of Windows, and that's the 1990s versions Linux that people have in their minds. But if we were to sit people down in the Sahara experiment and take a look at some of the modern Linux operating systems like Linux Mint, like Zandros, like Mandriva, some of those, and even Ubuntu, and turn on the fancy graphics and the flaming windows and the spinning cubes and all those sorts of things, and right. The transparency, people would say, and I've had people look at my Linux computer before Vista came out, just before Vista came out. And they looked at it, and they saw the screen I was using, and they said, "Ooh, is that the new Vista interface? That is cool." And, of course, I said, "No, that's Linux."
Microsoft wishes that was the new Vista interface.
Exactly. But, yes.
See, that's been my beef all along, and I've said this, you know, from day one. I think if you, Larry, set a computer up for me, if I said, here's what I need to do, okay, you set it up for me. You pick the Linux distribution. You pick the interface. You pick all the little add-ons and things that I need to get my job done. I would probably embrace Linux. But for me to have to figure all that out on my own, I'm not so motivated.
Right. Yes. And that's the precipitating event right there, to have someone switch over to Linux. They have to have some motivation. And for some people, it's when their Windows computer crashes. For other people, it's when their computer is so old they want to buy a new one, and they're afraid of Vista because of all the bad press it's got, and they don't want to spend the money on a Mac, and so they look at the alternative, and that's when they begin looking at, well, what else is out there? I know Mac, I know Windows, what else is out there? Let me look. And what they find is Linux.
I can't help but wonder if somebody could figure all this out in Linux on their own, they could probably solve all their problems with Windows if they were so motivated.
Well, yes and no. The newer, more newbie-friendly versions of Linux, like Ubuntu, like Mandriva, that are designed for the novice user of computers, are designed so that they're much, much easier to install. Put in a CD, it boots up itself, and there's an install icon on the screen you click, and it walks you through it.
All right, we will continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Got an interesting question, I believe, from Fort when we come back for Larry. This is the Computer America Show. Stay with us. Network. Don't forget that this is the last week, Carrie and Larry, to enter in our Click and Win contest with CompUSA. It closes out this Friday, so you don't get a couple more days if you haven't entered. Just go to computeramerica.com and click on the logo there, the big one. You can't just click and win. We are giving away, CompUSA and Computer America are giving away an Veritech dual-core all-in-one desktop. It's got the Intel Core 2 Duo with 2.4 gigahertz processor, 2 gigabytes of DDR2 memory, a 320 gigabyte SATA 2 hard drive, the DVD burner, NVIDIA graphics card, TV tuner, which is really cool, a flash card reader for your memory cards and your camera, and it's got a 22-inch LCD screen. But get this, everything I just said is in that 22 LCD screen. It's all in one. There is no extra box. They got everything in there. It's absolutely gorgeous. We're giving that away as our grand prize here at Computer America. The last night is this Friday at midnight. It closes out, and I mean it closes out. You can't enter it anymore. And then on Tuesday, the following Tuesday, which is the 28th of October, Lonnie Paul, the director of e-commerce for CompUSA, will be on the show with me and Carrie. We'll give away the Veritech computer along with some other goodies that Lonnie's got stored away. So you want to get involved with that too. And also, along with the Veritech all-in-one desktop computer, we'll be giving away a copy of System Mechanic from Iolo Technologies, the PC tune-up experts. And you can check them out at www.iolo, that's iolo.com. And you can get any of Iolo's products directly from CompUSA.com. So that's something very, very nice. So, Larry, did you enter to win?
Well, I'm clicking and clicking and clicking. More clicks is better, right?
There you go. So make sure that you're entered in, because it does close out. It's a really, it's going to be a fun, it's been a fun contest. And then my understanding is, as we've done before, when we get when we give that away, Lonnie Paul will also announce the next contest, because we're keeping them coming, especially for the holidays too, you know. But certainly, you want to get a chance to win this computer. It's a really slick computer. And it will run Linux. There you go.
Yes.
So there you go.
I think it's fair to say most computers will.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't think there's anything that really won't, right? I mean, and the internet runs on Linux.
Yes, a good portion of it. That's
I'll tell you, I may be adopting Linux here soon for a specific purpose, and that is I keep running into clients that have servers that don't need them. So I keep replacing their – I pull their server out, and I replace it with a network-attached storage device, but the transfer speeds on these network-attached storage devices is abysmal. It's just terrible.
Right, right.
And I'm thinking a nice network-attached storage device hooked up to an old cheap computer with a gigabit network card in it will probably outperform, be less expensive, and won't need the maintenance that a server needs that the client doesn't really need anyway.
You bet.
So I'm right on the fence with that, because I'm pretty happy with these US Robotics 8700s. That are network attached storage devices. They have four hard drives. I hook three of them up in a RAID 5 array so that the fourth drive will kick in automatically if anything happens to the other three, and it'll even kick an email off to me to let me know that there's a problem. And I do like that, but I've got to imagine there's got to be a Linux solution out there. It's probably running Linux anyway.
Right. Yeah, and in many cases, a lot of these network attached storage devices are running Linux. And yes, you could get an old computer and attach something and run a Linux server on it, like Red Hat or OpenSUSE or something like that.
Well, I think this is what we're going to do in the next hour. We're going to cover these kinds of questions. We've got some questions in the chat room. You brought some questions with you. And we'll dedicate hour two to answering your questions. How about that?
Sounds like a plan. All right. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux this hour and next hour. We'll continue on right after your local and national news. Stay with us.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
More of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And if you're just joining us, we are in our third Tuesday of the month. That means we are devoting the entire show to Linux, and more Linux. Larry Bushy continues on with us. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And the first hour, we were talking pretty much about, you know, I'm ready to try Linux. I'm going to use Windows. I'm going to be using Windows or Mac. How do I minimize the learning curve and maximize compatibility? I think we did a fairly good job in answering that question. You certainly can listen to it again, because we archived the past 2 weeks of Computer America shows at ComputerAmerica.com. Just click on the listen button. If you have podcasting software, you can also subscribe to the podcast there over at Apple's iTunes. You go to the podcasting section there first, and then keyword Computer America to subscribe to the podcast. Before we move right into it, we got a caller. His name is Daryl. He's calling us from I don't know if I can pronounce this a city correctly, Matomo, California. A lot of cities there. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hey, Daryl.
Hi, Craig. Hi, Kerry. Larry, nice to have you on the show tonight.
What city are you calling from?
I'm calling from Napomo.
Oh, Napomo. Okay, now I got it. Okay, thanks.
Little stuffy nose, but anyway. I just wanted to tell a couple of hopefully short stories about using Linux over the years. One is using a live CD to recover data from a dying Windows hard drive that would not boot under any circumstances. And it was just amazing to have I used an old version of Nopix even to do that, and hooked up a USB thumb drive and off it went, and I was able to recover the lady's data, and she was really happy. Had to buy her a new hard drive though, but and then I have a friend who works for a major university around here, and he set up a file storage Linux box for me. That old K6 processor, a 500 megahertz machine, old machine. Threw a bunch of hard drives in it, and he says, "Hey, watch this." And he got into that terminal command line thing, and he logs into his machine at work down in Santa Barbara. And then from that machine, he logs into his machine at home. And then from his machine at home, he logs back into the machine that he's sitting at. And it's like this 200-mile round trip. And I'm going, that's just
nerdy.
Really cool.
Not the word I would have used.
having that kind of power, and it's free.
Yeah, okay. not pretty, not too practical, but very impressive.
well, it was able to let him do, it's able to let you do things like when you're not at home, when you're not at work or whatever, sort of like what Carrie does with Log Me In.
Or even Real VNC.
That too, right.
which they have a Linux version of as well.
But just that ability. And you were saying using a network attached storage, you can run
yes.
the Linux box without a keyboard and without a mouse and without a monitor. Just stick it in a corner somewhere, and you have this huge case you can put all kinds of hard drives in.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
And that's a very good point, because I have an old laptop where the screen died on it, and I just hooked it up to an external monitor temporarily to get it set up, and I'm now using it as a printer server.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
It's more stuff not in a landfill.
Exactly. It sounds to me like Linux, it's where good, where normally you have a PC that's ready to die. It just breathes more life into the equipment because even though it's limping along, what would you do with a laptop with no screen?
The thing. He could have went out and bought a print server.
Yeah.
But the print server probably would have been running Linux anyway.
Yeah.
So why not just use that old computer to do these isolated one-task jobs? I mean, that's mm-hmm. essentially what we're talking about here. Network attached storage is an important job, but we don't want it to do anything else. We don't want it to be, a browser. We don't want to do any of these other things. If we were looking for an alternative to our Sonic Wall firewall, it costs us a couple $100 to relicense it every year. And I understand there's something called IPCOP and COPFilter, which would help us to prevent employees from going places they shouldn't, but it was far too complicated for me to figure out, and I just paid the $200 to SonicWall.
Sure.
But as the Linux continues to improve and as my motivation changes, I'm getting a little braver, and as time permits, that is another area I'd like to spend more time in and figure out this alternative to the SonicWall, that you'd be able to block, say, all pornographic sites, and be able to block all shopping sites, and be able to block,
Computer
sites that are not related to business.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But at the same time, allow them to get their work done, that it doesn't interfere with their ability to do their research and things they need to do at their office.
Well,
but again, an old computer would be perfect for that job. I guess that was my point. You slap two network cards in it, one going in, one going out, throw Linux on it, configure it, which is the tricky part, and then you've got an old machine that you've given it a new purpose in life. Now instead of, we tend to use our computers for everything, don't we? I mean, at least our Windows and our Mac computers, and probably for the Linux gurus out there, they use Linux for everything too. They use it
That's
for
right.
their checking and their bill paying. They use it for
exactly.
email communication. They use it for
photo editing.
The list goes on. Photo editing, another good example. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could continue on for the next 10 hours of what we can use it for. But to isolate it and say, we just want it to do this one task. We just want it to be a network-attached storage device. Or we just want it to be filter our network activity, our internet activity, are typically devices we go out and we buy a product for that. We buy a network-attached storage device. Or we go out and we buy a print server. We go out and we buy a SonicWall router. And come to find out, embedded in them all is Linux.
So, well, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why so much of the internet is run on Linux-based systems, because you can configure them to be a minimum piece of hardware that running one of these complex operating systems just wouldn't have the horsepower to do it. But with Linux, it gets if it has a singular job doing this, it can do it, and it can do it quite well, and better so than the ones with the more powerful systems running the more powerful operating systems. It's like a dedicated piece of hardware.
Yeah, and one of the things that makes Linux ideal for that sort of thing is the fact that, unlike Windows, you do not have to reboot it every once in a while. There are people who have servers running who installed Red Hat or things like that on it years ago and have never applied an update to it because it's running a server, an internal server on a business somewhere, and have never needed to install anything on it. And as a result, since they never upgraded the kernel, which is the one thing that you generally have to reboot for, they've never rebooted the thing in 2-3 years. And so that's not uncommon. Linux is just that stable, especially the server versions of Linux that are designed to be up and running 24/7.
Well, that's what I was going to say about that little box that I had. Was it sat there for 2 months, did its job, never had to touch it. And with Linux, you can strip out the stuff that you don't want. You don't have to take Paint and WordPad and Internet Explorer if you don't want them. You don't, you know, take out the stuff that you're not going to use, and you have that many less problems. Anyway, I'm going to let you guys keep going and listen to the show.
Hey, listen, thanks, Daryl, for giving us a call.
Thanks very much for calling
in. You're welcome.
Yes.
You guys have a good night.
No, yeah, good stories. Thanks.
I'll be in the chat room.
All right.
We'll see you in there.
We'll see you there. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. You see, that's what we do here at Computer America. It's just basically a one big multitasking giant family here. Go into the chat room, come on the air, participate, talk, tell the stories, that's what we do here. And if you want to involve, and you can do the same thing. If you want to give us a call, toll free 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. That's the number they'll get you on to get through. Email live@computeramerica.com, or yes, please join us in the chat room where Larry is participating, and I guess Daryl from California is going to be in there as well. It's your show, and that's what we're here to do. And right now, of course, we're talking Linux, all Linux. Any questions you have about it, or you got a good Linux story, we'd like to hear from you too as well.
I understand Larry brought some questions with him, speaking of which.
Okay. What do we have here? Here's a question. What's an ISO, and how do I make one? Where do I get them from, and which version do I download?
Good questions, all. An ISO is an image of a CD. It can be a CD or a DVD, but typically it's a CD. And it's a file. It's a file that ends in .iso, and it's a standard CD image. And that's how Linux distributions are provided to you over the internet. Certainly, in many cases, you can send in for a CD to be mailed to you. But the way most Linux users get their Linux is from their Windows PC or their Linux PC or their Mac. They go to the website for the distribution. So if you wanted to get Ubuntu, for example, you would go to the Ubuntu website, and right there on the Ubuntu website, there is a link that would let you download the version of Ubuntu for your particular hardware, whether it's 32-bit hardware, whether it's 64-bit hardware. And there are various versions of Ubuntu you can download as well. But what you're downloading is an ISO file, which is not a CD, but it's an image of a CD. And what you do with that is, in your CD burning software, assuming you have a CD burner, and that would be a prerequisite, and you have CD burning software, you choose not to copy the file to a CD. You choose to copy an image or burn an image to the CD. And what that does is it takes all that stuff that's encoded in that ISO file and it makes it into a CD for you. If you just copied the file over onto the CD, you would have a file called Ubuntu.iso on the CD, and it wouldn't do you any good.
A lot of people make that mistake. Think of an ISO file as sort of like a zip file, where there's a bunch of data inside of it.
Yeah.
But it's a much more advanced zip file because it can contain the boot sector information and other things that can make that CD bootable.
Mm-hmm. And so you need software on your computer to be able to burn it onto a CD so that then you can put the CD into your CD drive and then boot from it. And at that point, depending on what it is, if it's a live CD, it will boot into an operating system, a live operating system for whatever the distribution is that you've got downloaded. And many of those will have the ability to install the Linux software onto your computer as you're running the live CD.
Cool. Well, I guess the music means we have to take another break.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that.
That's why I stopped talking.
I know this. You got this down well. This is the Computer America Show. We're talking to Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Glowing Linux podcast. We'll continue on. It's all Linux the rest of the hour. Your opportunity to ask your questions, give us a call. We'll be right back. Twenty-five minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Hey, don't forget to get yourself on the Computer America Buddy List. That's right there at the Computer America homepage, because you do. When you do that, two great things happen. First of all, you get our weekly show reminder. That's our email newsletter that gets delivered fresh and piping hot into your email inbox every Monday. It is the only place where you can read the entire lineup of shows for that week. We have the people coming on the program, you know, what they're going to be talking about, what companies they're with, the topics at hand. That's only in the show reminder. We do that purposefully because we want to give you a reason to subscribe, and that's one of the reasons, one of the things that you get. And also, you get put into our buddy list winning list. In other words, every Friday, we draw from the list of buddy list subscribers and pick a winner, and that winner wins not one but two terrific prizes. This week, this past Friday, Keith Platts was our winner. Keith wins the Logitech Wave keyboard. Very, very nice. And also, Keith gets a copy of PC Tools Internet Security Suite. And that's a PC Tools all-in-one security suite featuring their award-winning anti-spyware, antivirus, firewall, and spam protection. And also, get this, when we get a call, an email, a feedback, even a chat room visit from someone who's outside of North America, that person gets a copy of PC Tools latest version of Spyware Doctor version 6.0. That's it. You don't get to do a drawing. You win it. Just that simple. And so we have lots of things and goodies for everybody, including the contest that we mentioned earlier with CompUSA. So again, congratulations, Keith. By the way, Kerry, Keith's in his email address, he has the words arson investigator. So evidently he's in some form of law enforcement. So that's kind of interesting. So congratulations, Keith, on your win this week. So right now we've got Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. We're answering questions all about Linux, and got some interesting comments. And we just finished explaining what an ISO is. One of the questions, Kerry, you said we had a couple other questions in the chat because they went scrolling by me. I don't know if you caught them.
Well, the one question you asked had three questions attached to it, so we got the first part of it.
Ah, okay.
Which was, what is an ISO? And then I believe the rest of it was, you know, picking a version. It's always the same thing, isn't it? How do you acquire an ISO?
How do you make one?
How do you know which one to get?
Yeah, how do you make one? Where do I get them from? And which version?
Well, I already mentioned how to make it. You use your CD burning software to.
Yeah.
Right.
And you don't burn the ISO image. Yeah. You extract the ISO image. So, like, if you had, for example, if I use Nero, which is a popular CD burning software, and of course, if you have a DVD burner, that'll work the same. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You would bring up Nero, and you would click on File. I'm actually waiting for Nero to load as I do this, so I can do it live and go step by step through the process. It's quite simple. Click on File, click on Open, and then you would look for the ISO file. And then as soon as you open the ISO file, Nero is going to tell you to put a CD or a DVD in, because you can have an ISO file for a DVD as well. Mm-hmm. Although the Linux distributions are all on CDs, right? Are there Linux distributions on DVD?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, okay,
Some of them are on multiple CDs, and if you don't want to get multiple CDs and you do have a DVD burner, you can download the DVD.
Well, what Nero will do, and probably any CD burning or DVD burning software is going to be the same. When you open the ISO file, it instantly comes up and says, you know, but in your CD or DVD. It's going to determine that more than likely based on the size of the file. If the file's under 700 megabytes, it'll fit on a CD, so there's no reason to put it on a DVD. It'd be a waste. Not that you couldn't. I mean, if you've got a stack of DVDs and you don't have any CDs, you could burn it to a DVD and just follow the steps to burn. You know, it's going to want to know, do you want a multi-session? No. Do you want to close the session? Yes. Do you want to finalize it? Yes. Do you want to burn it the top speed? Probably not. I find on DVDs I can burn at top speed, no problem, but I find compatibility issues often occur with CDs burned at higher speeds. So I generally don't burn CDs any faster than 16, maybe 24x. In spite of the fact my burner can probably burn at like 48 or something like that, and the CDs I buy are supposedly 52 speed compatible. As long as I'm reading them back in my computer, I don't have a problem, but when I put them in DVD players or if I put them in other people's computers, it's sort of a hit and miss. And it seems to improve the compatibility if I slow the burn down.
Yeah, I've found the same thing on other CD burning software in Windows as well. It just doesn't seem to be able to keep up with the speed.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, but it seems like it hasn't been improved. It seems like the same problem has always existed. The chat room says CD Burner XP has a burn ISO option on its opening page, so it's pretty clear. All right, that music means time.
Maybe I'll talk about how to do it under Linux.
Sounds like a plan.
That sort of defeats the purpose if you've already got Linux, but all right. We'll do that when we return.
Distro.
We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Chicken and egg thing.
Computer America.
It's 35 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy continues on with us. It's the third Tuesday of the month, and we're devoting the entire show to Linux. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. So, gentlemen, where were we?
We were talking about how do we burn an ISO, a CD image, and put it on a CD so that it actually does something other than just have a file on a CD.
Now, what was the thing about Linux, and then we had the chicken and egg thing kind of going there?
Yeah. Well, I was going to describe how to burn a CD from an image, from an ISO image, using the software available in Linux.
Right.
And the chicken and egg is, if you already have Linux, why do you want to burn a Linux CD? Well, there may be other CDs that you want to burn but from an ISO image. Or you may decide, you know what, there's no risk and there's no cost to me trying out other distributions. Maybe the one that I downloaded isn't the best one for me. Let me try some other ones. And so you want to burn your own little collection of CD images. Or the other thing is, some of the distributions don't have an upgrade feature like Ubuntu does, for example, where when there's a new version available, a new version of the distribution available in Ubuntu, you can, after getting your regular updates to the software, to the operating system and the applications, if there's a new version available, it will let you know that right there as you're doing your updates. And it will say upgrade now to the latest version, and you can download the upgrade. Some distributions don't give you that ability to upgrade from the previous version without burning another ISO. So you might need to burn a CD to upgrade to the next version. So that's another circumstance where you would want to do that.
Hmm.
So why don't we talk about the software that you can use in Linux to do that?
Okay.
There are two different versions of CD burning software that I have used. One comes under the GNOME desktop manager, which is something that would be used by most of the Linux distributions out there. They use a desktop manager called GNOME. And on many of those, there is a CD burning software that I don't use all that much, and I'm trying to find it here. I don't remember the name of it offhand now. Oh, if somebody's in the chat room and can help me out here, that would be great. But the one that I do use, let's just kind of put that aside for a second. The one that I do use is designed specifically for KDE, the K-desktop environment, which comes under many Linux distributions and is available for any Linux distribution. And it is called K3B. It's probably one of the most popular CD burning and DVD burning software out there. And I'll give you the step-by-step on how to use it, very quick steps, after the break.
Right after the break. Okay, and it's only 60 seconds, so we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address, or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We continue on with Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, as we continue on our Linux show.
Larry Bushy, creator and founder of the Going Linux podcast, available at goinglinux.com. Of course, I have all the links. Actually, all the links and everything we're talking about are in our show notes right now. Before the break, Larry was telling us how we can create or burn a CD from an ISO image that we download in Linux.
Right.
As you were.
Okay, and the other software that I was trying to remember the name of is called Bracero. A lot of the...
I wonder you can remember it.
Yeah, exactly. well, Nero isn't all that... okay, so you can think about burning Rome and all
that's
that sort of
right.
stuff. But anyway, okay.
And, you know, K3B just pops to mind, too. When I
Yes, it does. Well, you know, if you're using Linux on a regular basis, you'll know K3B. It's a really fantastic CD burning
I'm
software.
Sure.
When you open it up, it has a number of panes, very similar to Nero, and on the bottom there are six buttons. One says burn a CD image, and when you click that, you have an option to select the file that is the ISO image that you want to burn, and then you select your CD-ROM drive or your burner from another little drop-down and hit Start. And it's as simple as that. It's really, really easy. Just as easy as it is on some of the Windows applications as well. So there's really nothing to be afraid of. You don't have to get into the command line and mount and unmount and all those kinds of things you used to have to do in the 90s. You might also be thinking to yourself, the other question we haven't answered is, how do we choose which version? You know, you go to the website for, let's say, OpenSUSE. If I open that really quickly, there's a Get It button on there. So you click that, and in OpenSUSE, they have a step-by-step. The first step is select the type of computer, and it gives you the options 32-bit, 64-bit, or PowerPC. Then you choose whether you want a DVD, a live CD, or a network install. A DVD is something that allows you to install the software in the case of OpenSUSE, but is not a live CD. The live CD from OpenSUSE allows you to test it out on your computer, but doesn't allow you to install it. So if you want to try it out, you've actually got to download both. Or the network install is just a mini CD that allows you to boot into an installer that then downloads everything that you need from the internet. And then you choose your download method, whether you want to use a torrent or you want to use standard FTP or standard HTTP protocol to download it. And then you click the link provided and you're downloading. So they've made it very, very easy to select what it is you're looking for. There are some other distributions that are not quite as newbie-friendly, and you end up with this long list of possibilities. And what you want to do there is you want to look for the most recent one that has the word stable next to it. And that's usually the
we're not talking
the
horses, are we here?
No, stable as opposed to unstable.
Got it.
as in, it might crash on you if you try this because it's still in beta. So you want to choose the latest release or the stable release or the current release or something labeled like that. And then it'll be a link that actually ends in .iso, and that'll allow you to download what you're looking for. So
speaking
they made
of,
it really easy.
Speaking of which, isn't there a new Ubuntu scheduled
yes.
for release any day now?
Yeah, 9 days according to the counter on their main page. 9 days to go to the newest release of Ubuntu. Now, Ubuntu is from a company called Canonical. It is a free version of Linux that is available on a six-month rolling release. I shouldn't say rolling. That's not what they have. They're on a six-month release schedule. So every 6 months, they come out with a new version. Version 8.04 is the version that they have currently available, and in another 9 days, they will have 8.10. Now, you might think, what happened to 05, 06, and 07? The point number is the month, and the 8 is the year. So 8.04 was April 2008, and 8.10 will be October of 2008.
Oh, so it's just that's like how ATI does their drivers. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. So now 8.04 was a long-term support release, which means that it is supported for a much longer period of time. Give me a second here, and I'll click on the link, and it'll tell me how long it's supported for. The 8.10 is one of those interim releases that gives you new features, but it's not a long-term support release. 8.04 is supported through 2011 if you download the desktop version. If you download the server version, it's supported by Canonical through 2013. It'll be a shorter support length of support for the interim releases in between.
So let's get to some emails now. You have a listener to the Going Linux podcast who wrote in and said, I have a Creative XFi sound card that isn't supported in Ubuntu 8.04 unless I use the 033 for sound. I don't know what that means. Also, isn't ALSA isn't supported as of yet. Since I only use Windows to play Halo on Sunday nights, I run Ubuntu exclusively. I've recently gotten to the Skype on the Skype bandwagon, but 033
OSS.
OSS, yes.
This creates, font is really, really tiny.
Yeah, OSS creates problems. Get glasses. The only way I can use ALSA is by using my motherboard's audio. I have an Asus Striker Extreme motherboard.
Yes.
I thought I went back to ALSA, but I also only get sound out of my headphones that I use for Skype. No sound from speakers now. Can I just reinstall Ubuntu without losing all of my installed programs and settings? I have my /home on a separate partition. I'm hoping this will get my sound back and allow me to use speakers and headphones. Looking forward to your answer, Trevor.
Yes, and Trevor has some interesting questions here and has some acronyms that people may not be familiar with. In Linux, the sound system is something that hasn't been as well developed as it has been on the Macintosh or on Windows, quite frankly. And there are two really different versions of the sound driver for Linux. There's OSS. That's the older one. It stands for Open Sound System. And then there's ALSA, that ALSA. That stands for Advanced Linux Sound Architecture. I had to read it because I didn't remember it. ALSA is what most current Linux distributions use and provide, but it also provides a compatibility layer so that if you need to use some software that only recognizes the Open Sound System or the OSS drivers, it can still use it. And I think that's what's going on with Trevor here, is that he has some software that is able to use either one, and he's switched back and forth. So there are really two points here. One is solving his issue with the sound, which he wrote me back later and said that he, after he sent me the email, he received an automatic update to the kernel, and the Linux kernel contains drivers like this. And I guess there was an update to the sound driver as well, because he said that that fixed his sound problem. But his question that I'd like to answer here is, if he didn't fix it and he did want to go ahead and reinstall Linux, his question is there some way to do that without having to lose everything? And he's in really good shape for doing that, because with Linux, it puts all of the user's documents into a single location, and that's in the home directory. And that can be your email, it can be any word processor documents or spreadsheets or downloaded music or any of that stuff. It puts it all by default into your home directory. And in addition, it also puts all of the preferences and settings for all of your applications. So for example, if you're using Firefox and you've downloaded some add-ons and you've got your bookmarks all set up and you've got all of your preferences set exactly the way you want to, all of that stuff is stored in hidden directories in your home directory. So if you do a backup of your home directory and reinstall Linux, all you have to do is restore that home directory and you're back and sailing with all your preferences just the way they were before you started.
All right. I got one more email. We're going to see if we can squeeze in between now and the end of the show. So we're going to take a little break. We'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show. It's all on Linux tonight. Stay with us. We'll be right back. On the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry, let's see if we can squeeze one more of these in from Jonathan. He says it has a unique twist. He says, thank you for the podcast. He's talking about the Going Linux podcast. And doing the Computer America show. I guess he's talking about the Computer America show. hopefully more people get interested in Linux and make the switch. I was wondering if you could suggest a company or website that I could check out for Linux support. I am willing to pay for the support. I appreciate any help. I'm looking for a place that can support Ubuntu, Debian, SUSE, Fedora, Mandriva, because I'm building a website that is going to pre-install this distros onto computers. So I'm looking for some sort of tech support I can bundle with the systems. Any direction would be appreciated. Thank you for your help and the podcast. Thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah, and we have a Jonathan in the chat room. I don't know if it's the same Jonathan or not, but whether it is or not, Jonathan, you have a really unique twist on getting support for Linux. It sounds like you are wanting to give support for Linux. And in fact, I know he runs a website where he is going to be setting up a website, rather, where he's going to be selling computers that he's configuring, which is one of the reasons why he wants to be able to provide this support. So I've provided quite a lengthy list to him. First of all, there are the free support sites, and you can get paid support as well from the distribution sites themselves. And Debian is at debian.org. Fedora is at fedoraproject.org. Mandriva is at mandriva.com. And Red Hat is at redhat.com. Let's see, SUSE support is at support.novell.com, and Ubuntu is ubuntu.com. You can get the support for them right there. Now, if you want to provide the opportunity, Jonathan, on your website for people to purchase support, there are a number of folks out there who are resellers of support for Linux, and we'll provide some links in the show notes to a couple of those as well. I'm not as familiar with those, but these are third-party organizations that can sell support to you and or your purchasers of computers running Linux.
Well, there you go. And it's a different Jonathan that there was in the chat room. Although he wants to know if there's any news on whether Linux is going to retire their monolithic kernel.
Not that I'm aware of.
somebody said. Murph says that the answer is probably along the lines of fat chance.
So, yeah, exactly. I like Murph's answer better than mine.
There you go. Hey, listen, Jonathan, Larry, we're just about out of time here.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah, I did too. But again, it's goinglinux.com is the website right?
And you can send in your comments here to Computer America, or if you want to send an email to me directly, it's goinglinux@gmail.com.
There you go. Hey, Larry, it's always a pleasure having you here on the show. Thanks so much, and we'll see you the next third Tuesday of the month in November, okay?
I will be here.
All right. We will see you then. Take care. Have a great evening, and thanks again.
Thanks.
All right. Good night.
Larry has provided us with extensive show notes, which I have copied and pasted into our show notes link. If you want to check that out, go to ComputerAmerica.com and click on show notes at the top of the page. tomorrow. Yes. Wednesday Madness.
Oh, no, it's Wednesday Madness. Oh, my goodness. And we have a special guest, do we not?
Indeed we do.
Very special. I'm excited to say. Mr. Steve Bass is going to be here.
That's
in the first hour. Yeah. Right. Okay, and a 20-year veteran of PC World Magazine. So we're going to be hearing from him tomorrow night. Can't wait for it. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.